Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. Today is Thursday, October 29th, 2015. A couple days from Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody. And this week I've got a return guest. We're going to do actually the next 3 weeks on this guest because we've done two previous shows and we're going to re-air them. But this week's show is a live show with the guest. His name is Joel Elston. And Joel has a very interesting history. We won't rehash all the history on this show. You'll hear it on next week's show. But the cut to the quick part of it is that he has a new book out, and that new book is, well, we're going to find out exactly how, but it's related to his experience where he combines the law of attraction with psychotherapy, believe it or not. And Joel, I'm not going to try to set up any more than that. First of all, welcome to the program, and what's the name of the book?
Well, first of all, it's great to talk to you again. The name of the book is The Bench, and it speaks of a bench that I sat on about 20 years ago, and it's when I had an epiphany in my life of needing a recovery. My addiction was out of control. My life was out of control. And this bench is on an island in Florida, and it unintentionally became sort of a base for me to return many, many times over the years, and it played such a key role in everything that happened over the next 20 years. So that was the obvious name for my book when I decided to do it. So it relates, as we have talked in the past on the previous shows, it really touches home with how the law of attraction eventually came into my life and the effect, my understanding of the law of attraction, how it affected the course thereafter. So I'm grateful to be here today, and I can't wait to sort of go over where we're at since the last time we spoke.
Well, obviously, like I said, anyone who wants to hear the fuller story can check out next week's show, but let's just give them like a 30-second overview. Tell us about, just in 30 seconds or less, how you got to that bench in the first place.
Well, Walt, I had a severe gambling problem. I had lost everything. I had stolen money from the company that I was working with. I was facing felony criminal charges. I was homeless, and I had nowhere to go. There's a bench on an island in Anna Maria, Florida. It's a beautiful, beautiful island just south of Tampa. And I was sitting on this bench making a real decision of, am I going to figure out a way to recover from this addiction, or was I just going to kill myself? It really had boiled down to that just simple of a decision.
Very stark.
Exactly. It wasn't, and there was very little emotion attached to it, shockingly.
Really?
Because I was so destroyed mentally and emotionally through all that I've been through, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill myself. It really was almost like a business decision. Do I want to invest the time and money into recovery, or am I just too tired to let me move on to the next life?
Wow, yeah, that's a pretty severe situation. So we know that cutting to the chase in terms of coming to the present time, it has been a wonderful road since then. Why don't you touch on some of those highlights as you tell us more about the book?
Thank you. Yes, it has been an incredible journey. I got into recovery, and I was, my entire life, I have always been, I believed in God, I'm a Christian, but I've always felt there was a piece missing. And even when I got into recovery and I had stopped gambling, I was attending 12-step meetings, I was feeling wonderful about myself for the most part, but there was always this void that I felt that, what is the answer? And I would often go into a library even just looking and I never knew what I was looking for, but I knew I was looking for something. And along the path of recovery, I ran across a lady who was doing life coaching training, and I was a certified gambling counselor, and I had other credentials attached to it, but the life coach thing, I just actually found a magazine with her ad in the back, and I just said, well, let me just see what she's about, and her name was Dee Yo, and she was an incredible practitioner of the law of attraction. I didn't know the name of it at the time, but I went to the weekend course, and immediately, when she was describing what was happening attached to the law of attraction and how it worked in our lives, it's like when you know the answer to a question deep in your heart is answered immediately. When she started talking, I said, this is it.
For me, it's also, not only do you know the answer, but you realize you know the answer before they frame the question.
Exactly. I retroactively answered that backwards and could see how entirely for my life and what I'd been through. I had a tumultuous upbringing in a lot of ways. I was not abused or anything along those ways. It was just a lot of addiction in my family, and I'd lost so much to addiction, and now I'm an addict myself, and I then pieced together how my way of thinking actually invited that process into my life. And the challenge that I had for a while, being a Christian and also what I refer to as a recovering Southern Baptist, I faced a lot of people that actually thought this was New Age thinking that was predicted in the Bible as being Satan worship, or I'm like, oh, of course not. This is not a religion. Gravity is not a religion. It's just the law of gravity. The law of attraction is the same thing. Even Jesus Christ refers to the faith of a mustard seed can move a mountain. So the idea that in most religious teachings, of no matter what your faith, that they talk about your mindset of having what you're inviting in, what you're thinking about is what your reality is. And my progression in the study of the law of attraction and how it related to addiction, and then independently of that, with a bedfellow of addiction is depression. And is it were you acting out addictively because you're depression, or are you depressed because of your addiction? It doesn't really matter. But everyone I know that has an addiction has battled depression as well. And the law of attraction has really a remedy when you understand how to use it. I've mentioned to many people the law of attraction is taking place no matter what's happening. It isn't that you need to believe in the law of attraction. The law of attraction doesn't care if you believe in it. It is working in your life, and learning to utilize it is the key. When your mindset, and it starts at a very young age, where you almost invite, you know, that inner dialogue that our parents unintentionally instilled in us of all of our limitations and all of the fears and all the stuff that goes on, that inner dialogue is what creates our perspective. And our perspective is what feeds out into the universe, and that's what the law of attraction picks up on. And that's such an amazing feeling when you realize that you're in control of your inner dialogue, hence you're in control of your perspective, which really makes you in control of your life. And that so much I've been told in my life that you're powerless over so many things, and you're here on this planet, and you're really a victim of what life's lot has thrown at you. And the law of attraction sort of spits in the face of that theory and says, you know, yes, we've all been dealt different hands, but your perspective and attitude toward it is what dictates your reality. And that awakening over the course of the last 20 years, Walt, has brought me to a place where I could not feel better than I feel now. I have an incredible life. I've faced a lot of stuff in my recovery. In fact, I refer in one of the sessions that we've got that will air over the next few weeks was the loss of my son during this process. Mm. And if I would not have had the law of attraction as a tool, but the understanding of the law of attraction as a tool in my life, I don't know if I would have been able to handle that. But my perspective on that, I certainly wasn't pleased my son passed away. On any level, but I do believe, first of all, I will see him again. I believe that with all my heart. And beyond that, the joy he brought to my life far outweighed the void his departure created. Mm. So my attention has been focused on the joy he brought to my life. He had the ability to make me laugh no matter what trouble he was in. He could look at me, and I would laugh at him every time. Horrible parenting, by the way, Walt. But it was... He had this ability that maybe, and so when I get lonely or miss him, I remember some of the things he used to do, and it brings a huge smile to my face. So I've dealt with his death over the last year since we spoke with using these techniques, and it didn't mean I didn't go through the normal grieving process. Of course I did, but I look at him as just this incredible gift that the universe let me have for a while. And it was such a joyous time. I'm smiling right now talking about him. So using these techniques can be adapted in grieving processes, in dealing with depression, and dealing with addiction. And it, it I think we're just really touching the tip of the iceberg on the power that's involved with this.
I agree with you. In fact, I like what you said earlier about how the law of attraction doesn't really care if you believe in it. It's kind of like the law of gravity or the law of large numbers. They don't care if you believe in them either, but they still exist.
Exactly.
And they still get in the way if you try to trip them up. But the same thing is true for LOA. And because it doesn't matter whether you believe in it, you end up with, first of all, when you're starting to try to wrestle with, is it true? Does it really work? You take those first fumbling steps, and every step of the way, I don't know about you, Joel, but for me, every step of the way was like, there's no way this works. I'm going to try to believe this. I'm really going to try it, but there's no way this works. That's the place I was in. And then it's only over time as you experience it that you start to realize it really is there. It really does work. And it's really just me not knowing how to do it yet that's getting in the way.
Well, and I think that's what I run into with everyone, because it isn't simply about, okay, I think I'm going to make $1 million this year, so I'm going to make $1 million,
yeah.
And then when it doesn't happen, if you don't, it isn't saying it, and I do believe in saying stuff does help eventually convince you, but it's this inner dialogue that I talked about earlier that it gnaws on us all day, and it either gnaws on us or it supports us, and historically, negative thinking takes place, and you don't even realize you have control over it. There's no way this can happen. You generally can't go. If you've made $50,000 a year for the last 10 years, it's unlikely you're going to go make $1 million next year. It could happen, but it's unlikely because you don't really believe you're going to go make $1 million next year. One of the things that an example to sort of support that, in my life coaching, I also have a branch of what I do is success coaching. And a young man, he worked for a cable company, and he was upper middle management guy, and he was doing very well. He made $75,000 a year, but he had made $75,000 a year, and people in his orbit were making, on the same level, were making about $125,000, and he didn't know what the difference was. And he thought he was working very hard, and so he came in, and we started talking about, he didn't believe he could make $125,000. So what we broke it down to was the next month. Instead of, I said, can you make an extra $200 this week if you've made some extra calls and you actually took your crew out an extra day? And he goes, well, of course, that's easy. I said, well, let's do that. Let's go make an extra $200. He did that. Well, I explained to him, I said, well, $200 a week is a little over $10,000 additional a year. So you're already making $85,000. And he's like, well, yeah, I guess you're right. So you know you can make $85,000. And we walked through this process of him changing. After 9 months, I just heard from him the other day. We're not actually seeing each other anymore. He's sort of completed the program. But he has estimated this year he is going to make $105,000. And he has no doubt next year he'll make over $125,000. Nothing changed, but his perspective and willingness to do it a little differently instead of being stuck in that process. That's how the law of attraction works. When you really believe it in your core, the universe disregards the superficial thought. It's where this is where people start to think, okay, this is a little odd, but there's a vibration of thought. It's when you're vibrating a certain level, when you're really in love with a person, you feel you have that connection, that's a tangible that humans could feel. Well, when you really believe something to your core, the universe has no option but to respond to that. And and that's what the law of attraction is about. When you really believe this, and now it doesn't always happen in the way you want it to believe. Like, I really believe I'm going to win $100,000 in the lottery this week doesn't work, because the concept that you really don't believe you're going to be the one out of 250 million to do that, you can't just tune into that lottery. But if you really believe that I am going to become wealthy and I'm willing to do this, to follow the process that I know can be an effective tool, it's guaranteed to work. And something that you and I haven't discussed that I look forward to talking in the future about is, along with the law of attraction, the most under... It's not talked about a lot because it's really the easiest process, but most people forget the law of action.
Mm.
And yes. The law of action requires us, If every day I get up and do the exact same thing, but yet I'm vibrating on the level of I really want to change things and really want to be different, the law of action is not matching the law of attraction thoughts. So the law of action has to match. I have to do something different if I want different results. And this young man with the cable company, what he did was there was a three-hour block that he normally didn't. They would go out and sell in groups, and they'd go door to door. Well, him and I brainstormed. I said, well, there's retirement communities where people are home all day. So he put an extra 3 hours a day going to these communities that historically are underserved and was shocked at the response. So he did the law of action for him in response to his law of attraction thoughts was to do that piece. He added that piece. And that is something that's sort of the new evolution in my thinking. It isn't just the law of attraction. It's the law of action attached to it. Now, the law of action for most people, believe it or not, is the easy part. The law of attraction is the hard part of mastering. But there is a law of action that you're not going to manifest this stuff by sitting on your couch all the time.
That's right. And in fact, I kind of chuckled when you said that the only thing that changes is what's going on internally. And the reason I chuckled is that's everything. That's all you can change.
Exactly.
You can change your thoughts. You can change your actions. And that's it. There's nothing else in your control.
Exactly, and that piece is in a waste of time. Along with one of the great things that me again being working with people with addiction so much, the process of recovery. Most people know the Serenity Prayer, the idea of concept of please help me to accept the things I cannot change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference between the things. Well, that boils down to. Every day, when I find myself, my mind wandering on the stuff that I can't control, that is an incredible waste of energy. It's confusing my whole thought process. If everyone can combine with not just the way we think, but if those energies are placed on what is in our direct control, what an incredibly efficient process this becomes.
Mm. Yes, very much so. And in fact, by not putting the barriers in the way, that's what makes things happen.
Exactly.
That's what this whole concept of focusing on what you can't control does. It puts the barriers in the way. It says, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do that, and I can't do that. And, well, you're right.
Well, when you turn on the news, when you turn on CNN or Fox or wherever, they have all this. I made the mistake of flipping through the channels last night, caught just a little bit of a debate. I was like, whoa, I can't get involved with that because you're almost drawn into, there's gravity to the negative.
Oh, yeah.
And equal on the law of attraction is, yes, if we're anticipating our country is in horrible state of affairs, it is. Not because it really is. It's because that's what we're believing. And now what I can do, the part of my control is I can identify where the candidates stand and the ones that match where I'm at, then that's what I'm going to be able to do. I'm going to go vote on that person. That's all I can do.
And that's it. That's right. And in fact, when you look at the different aspects of society, politics you mentioned, that's like 100% negative. Entertainment, that's like 95% negative. The news, well, that's about 98.8% negative. The negativity is astonishing in terms of how ubiquitous it is. It's everywhere. It's in every aspect of our lives, and getting away from it is a real challenge.
Well, and exactly. This week, there's a South Carolina police officer and a young lady had an event in a school that's getting a lot of attention right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all that focus. At the same time, I have seen three stories of police officers putting their lives in jeopardy to save children, of a police officer buying a family, a very poor inner city family, groceries and bring. I have seen they're not on the national headline.
And it does raise the question: where do you see that news that other people aren't seeing it? Why is it that you're seeing it?
Right, and that's the key because I filter for good news. If I'm going to look for news, I actually do a Google search for uplifting or good news. I want to know stuff like that because I need to know. And here's what I really believe: 95% of our police officers. Or doctors or teachers are really great honest, sincere people that have their everybody's interest at best. I really believe that. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. I do believe that what the negativity factor, that 98% of the focus is on the 3 or 4% that are not doing what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so that creates...
That's what makes it news.
That's what makes it news. And within that, and the reason that applies to the law of attraction, is it affects our inner dialogue. You know, my youngest son had this discussion one day, and he said, this has been a couple years ago, and we live in the South, it's predominantly generally very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And he would hear some things at school. He says, Dad, is our country falling apart? And I'm like, Chris, it's not, buddy. It's just what people, it's the dialogue of what goes on between people. Are we perfect? Absolutely, we're not perfect. But the idea that we're an incredible nation of incredible people is what I want you to focus on. And you know, he's actually at a young age has been exposed to this quite a bit, and he's becoming quite a understander in being understanding of the law of attraction himself. And the filter of the negative is what it just permeates everything. So it makes it that much harder to practice the positive side of the law of attraction. Right now, the law of attraction again is feeding that negative influence, and that the shift requires, you have to take a shift really from where most of society is at to make this work and on your in your favor.
What a wonderful gift you're able to give to your son and to your patients, your clients, I should say, and to the various people who come into your life. This whole notion that from a very early age you can learn this stuff, you can start applying this stuff, and you can start essentially training your nervous system to always be looking for it and always filtering out the negative stuff. So your son's got a huge head start compared to the rest of society. And even those people who are older you're working with, they're basically, through your leadership, they're rewriting their nervous system. They're rewriting the programming and changing that programming around one step at a time until all of a sudden what used to be a negative internal dialogue starts turning into a positive dialogue.
I appreciate you saying that. And I have an example. There's a special needs class of what they deemed as emotionally handicapped children here locally. And there were these five young men in there, sixth graders. And they had been, most of them had come from very difficult situations, and they were responding to those difficult situations in the way you would expect. And they were separated from their class, and I'm really good friends with the teacher, and I started talking to her about exactly what we're talking about right now. And what we did, I went in and talked to these guys, and at first they thought I was a complete idiot. But as they listened, I told them that people had been lying to them, and they're like, "Yes, they have." And I go, "But not in the way you think." I said, "You think you're stupid. You think you're special needs. You think these things not because you are. It's because something has been told to you," and actually, it started working with them on them believing that these limitations are not real, that they're believing, that they have been believing lies, that the truth is they have an incredible power. And now, I don't want to exaggerate, because this was a very simple test, and I would love to do this under controlled circumstances, but all five of these young men have turned their entire school year around. They started to believe.
So what happened, I guess? What's the evidence?
They're all back in regular classes.
Really?
They all have A's or B's.
Wow.
And the process that the teacher was very concerned. She said, "I wish we would have documented what we'd done here. I was just a guest speaker a few times."
Right.
The idea that they bought into it, and she actually helps them with, you know, that they come, she's no longer their teacher, but they come to her, and when they have, because they still have, the home lives haven't changed, their perspective of the home life has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So the alcoholic father that tends to be abusive, it is what was prohibiting them from growing mentally and emotionally. He's still there, but their perspective of the situation has changed so much that they're looking beyond that, and the idea that they really are making progress in their way of thinking. And within the context of what we're talking about, there's been a that, and I think it was Harvard, but it's been many, many years ago. The teachers at this one school were I think psychologists approached the teachers. And I don't remember the exact story. I'll look up the case study one day and we'll talk about it further. But the concept was the psychologists approached the teacher and they wanted to do an experiment. And they told these teachers that a young man, he was in second grade, had tested higher than any other child in the history of the school, but yet he was only making average grades. And he would be coming up into the third grade with them the next year. And that they needed, the school needed to do a better job in meeting this young man's needs. So as the process continued, they monitored his progress. This is a very average student, by the way. What they told him was not remotely true. He was just an average student of average intelligence. At the end of the school year, he had grown. He was way above average in intelligence, and his grades reflected that. And he didn't know any different. The teacher's perspective of him changed, and the way they treated him changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, even the law of attraction even applied when the kid didn't even know, because the dialogue toward him changed. The teachers started, and when they interviewed them afterwards, the teachers were like, "Well, this is, the kid's much smarter than I am, so I got to do a better job." They gave him more attention. They mm-hmm. treated him with respect. And this young man benefited by a change of perspective from these people who had probably viewed him in a little negative, you know, he's just another ADHD second grader. But in reality, they bent over backwards. This kid, it's almost, the documentation says, he really shouldn't have been able to improve that much in 1 year, but it's so far off the standard improvement curve. But the fact that they believed it, they brought that home. And I believe that, how many kids out there, Walt, and if we could ever get this into the schools and the teachers and start this at a younger age, that's how you change the world. That sounds exaggerated, like an exaggeration, but that's the truth.
Well, I don't think it's all that much of an exaggeration, actually. I mean, I remember that there are some studies from the 1950s, I think there are multiple studies, where they did more of a controlled study thing, kind of along the lines you're talking about. In this particular case, they had three different classes coming in and three different teachers. And the first teacher was told that they were getting the advanced kids. The second teacher was told they were getting the average kids. The third teacher was told they were getting the below average kids. And in truth, it was all just a jumble. There was no separation like that. And sure enough, by the end of the year, the first class was getting A's and B's. Second class was getting B's, C's, and D's. The third class was failing. And that study has been replicated numerous times. Why it is that the education community hasn't learned from it after all these years, I don't know. But this is an old study. It's an old series of studies.
Well, and that's exactly the idea that we bring, what we bring to our children, both in school and at home. And, you know, in the placenta, there was no instructions with these kids. So the idea that the only way you learn how to be a parent is pretty much how you were parented, and that's either by how they parented, you were going to do it differently, or you thought they did a great job, you were going to do it the same way. But the reality is that the limitations that are instilled at a young age in children, unintentionally by their parents, and the belief system that you are a certain, you're limited to a certain thing because of your background or how much money we have. One of my foster kids that actually wasn't my direct foster kid, but a kid I worked with in foster care many, many years ago, was horribly abused and placed into foster care. He's actually graduating this year from med school. And he talks about how he's changed. He went from believing he was this sorry, pathetic waste of flesh, that's his term, and after several people got involved with him and started helping him see what an incredible brain he had, and he was able to make these transitions. He's going to be a medical doctor, and he came from probably the worst background you possibly could imagine. And really what happened was nothing changed except what he believed. And if we could get to every kid and help them believe that, not everybody's going to be an NBA player or a basketball player, but we're each born with a different set of skills, and each one so unique that if we were ever allowed to develop those and not be limited by all that we have been limited in the past, and this negative self-belief and this inner dialogue that goes, it, what does it, filters the law of attraction to the negative side. When all that comes to get, when you can reverse that, that's how all things change. That's how things become much more productive in life. That's how you fix so much, and that would be a curriculum that I would love to see instilled in every school system across our country. I think it would change everything.
I can see why you would say that. So let's get back to the book. Now, in the book, you obviously start at the bench and you keep returning to the bench, but can you give us a taste of, you know, some of the paths that you describe as you start on the bench and you go off and you do something in your life that I presume that's the way you're structuring the book. I mean, you tell me if I'm
exactly.
wrong.
Exactly. The very beginning of the book actually starts with a story of me being in Las Vegas that I talk about in one of our previous calls. I'm homeless. I'm eating out of a trash can, and it's a horrible time in my life. And I can remember just feeling so hopeless, and I was in the middle of Las Vegas. That's how the book starts, by that story. Then I regress back to my childhood, and you know, my biological father was a compulsive gambler, and probably by the time he was out of my life, probably by the time I was 5 or 6, and I never obviously never comprehended that. I had a grandfather who was very good to me, but he was also a severe alcoholic, and eventually my mom ended up marrying an incredible man who I refer to as my dad, and he's my hero. He's still with me, and I'm blessed to have him in my life, and he really sort of changed things for me in a lot of ways. He allowed me to start believing in myself, and I didn't believe a lot of the stuff that I thought about myself. And as I grew as a child and then into my insecurities and all the negative thought and how I became a compulsive gambler, eventually just how I view all that right now and then sort of reviewing in the book, every single thing that happened in my life on the negative side has been turned into a positive, or not, if it hadn't been a positive, it has been turned into an incredible turning point. You know, I was eating out of a trash can. It doesn't get much lower than that.
No.
And then later, as I talk about, it's a great turning point in relationship with my oldest son. Him and I relate over that story, and then that became my perspective of me eating out of a trash can changed, because I never would have related to my son if I didn't have that event happen to me. So I don't view the eating out of a trash can. Now, here clearly, Walt, I don't want to do that again. But the fact that it happened was a necessary event as I view it. And it turned into something that I never would have connected with. My son had been in, you know, multiple foster care placements in a 2-month period. I think it was 17 in a 24-month period, actually. And nobody had been able to connect with this kid. And believe it or not, that's the turning point when he heard what had happened and how he could relate that to his story. That's when him and I bonded. So in a sense, me eating out of a trash can changed this young man's life.
And to listeners, I want to cue you once again. You want to listen to next week's show, because that's the replay of a show from a few years ago, the first interview I did with Joel, in which he told the story in detail about how he influenced his son. So if it sounds a little bit sketchy here, listen to that show next week, because it'll really fill in the gaps for you.
Exactly, Walt. And you know, so there's been turning points. So what the bench marked for me was there were multiple times, there were multiple events over the course of from when I started my recovery, when I made that decision, that, and I would go back to this bench and I would meditate and I would pray, and no matter what happened, there were some horrible events, what I thought were horrible events along the way, or emotional ups and downs, that eventually later, because of my change of perspective, turned everything around. The book is basically trying to sort of piece together that no matter what happens, no matter how hopeless things are, once you adjust that perspective, you turn things, you actually reverse trauma, you change history. The events don't change, but your perspective of those events change when you implement this stuff.
Yeah, that's a fascinating concept right there, and it's one that I'm still trying to practice applying in my own life, because the idea that you can rewrite your own history in your own mind and in essence make it true so that you actually end up changing things around, that seems impossible. And yet I'm beginning to see evidence of it in my own life, and I'm sure you've seen tons of evidence in not only your life but in the experiences you had with your son and with the other people you've been dealing with.
Well, and that, well, that's exactly sort of the premise of where I go with this is traumatic injury, trauma has such a dictating factor and force, even if it's not post-traumatic stress syndrome, traumas are big events in our life that are very limiting and debilitating for many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
One of the reasons we don't do what we want to do sometimes is because of traumas and fears. And when you can see how these events happened, and you go back and you the event of me eating out of a trash can never changes, but my perspective of that event is completely different, and that makes everything. It's no longer a trauma. I have deleted a trauma from my brain, and that's a really important factor. When I, you know,
it's hard to understate how important that is, isn't it?
It is, and see, to me, that I think 100 years from now, this will be the concept that people are talking about. There's not a medication that can delete a trauma, but your perspective can. And the law of attraction, it assists with that, because once I believe that trauma is deleted, the law of attraction responds that way. it has no option. It has no emotion attached to this. The law of attraction, it brings everything into the equation. I do public speaking, and one of the speeches I give is your perspective, the human superpower. I believe that when you master this way of thinking, you have conquered what the universe or God has given us in a superpower. This is the best thing, the closest thing to a human has to a superpower. Mm-hmm. That ability to control your perspective, and once you do that, it just, again, I state in my book that when TJ and I had this revelation of a shared experience of eating out of a trash can, he retroactively changed my past, at the same time changed my future, by that one statement. He doesn't know. He died not knowing that the impact, because we never really talked about that much.
Wow.
But that impact is probably one of the greatest events that ever happened in my life, because I realized he just changed all that for me. And he changed my future, because I don't view anything because of that. I now know that no matter what's happening today, even his death, my perspective of it is much different because of him and that statement.
Mm.
So he actually helped prepare me to be able to handle all of that. And when I see him again, I'm sure we're going to talk about that a lot. And discuss all that. But continuing on with the book of where it takes me is the sort of bringing it to the point of, but obviously we're skipping over 20 years in a 10-minute period here. But if you, at the end, the revelation, the bench is my grown-up version of the giving tree.
Okay.
It has been there, and it, in the beginning it was there, and there was no way 20 years ago that me sitting on that bench, deciding whether I'm going to put a bullet in my head or not, that I one day would be replacing the remains of my son's ashes by that bench.
Do you have any idea what it is about that bench that made it so important to you?
It as I tell people, the bench, first of all, I'm huge. I love water. And being right there on the Gulf of Mexico is amazing anyway.
Okay, but so the location's good.
Yeah, there's something about me at that moment is when I made my connection with so much. Now, I hadn't quite identified the law of attraction that first day, but that's when I made a decision that I am going to really change things. And that sort of became a cornerstone. And I didn't even realize, Walt, that I probably returned to that bench. It's right down the road from where our house was on the island. So it just was convenient that I would go there. I have actually, as time gone on, I've flown down to Florida to sit on the bench and flown back. That sounds crazy to many people, but I have gone down there for one day to sit on the bench. And when I had decisions to make and when I had changes because I wanted to do that, I realized the bench itself represents nothing at all. It's a piece of wood. But the reality of that area, I equate being able to sit there is where I tuned in to so much in the universe and where my life changed.
So is it fair to say then, after that initial event of sitting on the bench and facing that stark choice, each time that you returned after it, you returned out of a matter of actual choice. Like, I want to go back to that bench because of what?
Because of whatever situation, exactly, because of whatever was facing me. Along the way, TJ was having a lot of difficulty, had a lot of decisions to make. I had moved down to Florida and probably made a hasty move from South Carolina down to Florida. And I really, against everybody's advice, I realized I made a mistake, and at the cost of probably $50,000, I had to turn around and go back to South Carolina within 6 months. Mm. And I had a lot of criticism for that at the time because people were, you can't be moving the kids like this. You're not making good decisions. And I knew that the decision to go to Florida was wrong, and I've determined all that at the bench. And, of course, the law of attraction taking place with that, when I believed the decision was wrong, there is no choice for me to go back to South Carolina because anything that was going to happen down there. And I get into all that in the book in great detail, but once we got back to South Carolina, everything just, it's almost like it instantly got back to where it needed to be. And that process along over the years when I've, the previous company that I worked for, when I decided to go into private practice on my own, I had that big decision to make. And before I would finally make that decision, I went and sat on that bench. And, when anything along the way, I would go sit on the bench, I would seek out the bench because it just felt like that is where I'm in tune with the universe. And the law of attraction, because I really believe that, makes that be the place where I'm most in tune with the universe. It's self-fulfilling prophecy.
It sounds like the bench has become your go-to decision point bench. It's where you're going to make the important calls.
Exactly. And that's I make a point. August 17th is the anniversary. August 17th of 95 is the anniversary of when I made that decision, when I sat on the bench for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Up until this year, every August 17th, I would just plan on being at the bench. Well, last year I was at the bench on August 17th, and my son died 2 weeks later. So I returned to the bench a few weeks after that and had a memorial service for him at the bench where I placed his ashes and remains. And what I did was, at that point, made a decision going forward that I won't go on August 17th, that on August 29th, the anniversary of his death, and I was there this year on August 29th, at 11 p.m. on the exact moment that he passed, and I go to that bench and tune in. And other people can say, well, that's just superstitions, whatever. For whatever reason, when I leave, I feel incredible, and it's like I've been recharged. I need to get there a couple times a year now. I'm probably, with the book, I'm probably going to go down there and actually do a book signing on the bench one day.
I would think that for most people, if they went to commemorate a death like that at the same time and the same instant of the original death, once a year in the same location, that would actually program negative results into their body. But it's not doing that for you. It's having the opposite effect.
One of my friends surprised me and met me at the bench this week. I mean, that day. I didn't know he was coming down. And he's very much a practitioner of the law of attraction as well. And he brought a list of funny TJ stories.
Ah.
And we laughed for probably an hour telling TJ stories. And it was a joyous occasion. And I'm sitting there with incredible appreciation that I adopted TJ when he was 13, and he passed away when he was 23. I was given 10 years of TJ. I look at it that I was given 10 years of TJ as my son. That's a blessing that nobody can ever take away. And I look at it from a pot. It is certainly not a mourning, and I do miss him. I can't say that enough. But it's a celebration, and when we had the celebration, I told funny TJ stories. This kid could make me. He could do the worst, most. A cop brings him home with pot, and I'm furious with him. And I said, TJ, I don't know what to do with you. He goes, I completely understand that, and I just die laughing. I'm like, who said that? So the idea that he brought such joy to my life, even though we had our struggles, I'm not trying to sound like his life was perfect. My goodness, he was a wild child. But what he brought to my life was amazing. And I mourn him in the way of celebrating him. And the law of attraction, that's a positive. It's it just brings more to it. I think I honor him more. He would expect nothing less than me to do it that way.
So if you actually went to that bench every year, August 29th, and mourned him, that would create the kind of negative spiral that most people end up on. You reverse that. You say, I'm not going to have a negative spiral. I'm going to have a positive spiral
off
of the same event.
Yeah, I bring a pizza because many times him and I sat on the bench. He was a big skimboarder and skateboarder, and you know he would be there all day at the island when we lived down there, and I'd have to bring him food to make him eat. And we would sit on that bench, and we would tell the stupidest stories and talk and laugh. And so I bring a pizza with me to the bench, and I don't drink Mountain Dew, but I bring him a Mountain Dew. And it's a fun event. It's not, and it has truly no negativity attached to it whatsoever, because it's pure joy that I enforce in my life. So with that, all of us together, when we as a collective, if everybody could start tuning into all of that positive, the universe would have nothing but the only answer would be to respond in a positive manner. And where we go with psychotherapy, and I'm also always have a disclaimer, Walt, that I'm not a doctor. I'm not telling anybody to quit taking meds, and I'm not giving any medical advice right now at all.
Sure.
But what I am a believer of, if we could start helping people reverse their traumas, or at least their perspectives of their traumas, and go back, and I have not had one person that tried this process that doesn't claim it changed everything they believe, and in a very positive way. It's like cutting the cord of all this baggage you've been dragging around by changing your perspective of these things.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really matter whether or not you believe, like you said, you don't have to believe in a law of attraction. You can be a Christian and believe in sowing and reaping. It's the same thing anyway.
Exactly.
Or you can be non-religious, not believe in any of that crap, and none of it is any good anyway. But you can believe in what Tony Robbins has taught, which is that you can reprogram your psyche, reprogram your psychology, reprogram your nervous system, and end up getting yourself to produce better results. You can look at it that way. They're all equally valid ways of looking at the same thing, and they all produce positive results.
And that's the key is instead of the idea of people saying, oh, well, you can't be a Christian, you can't believe that, I go, that's absolutely false. It you don't have to be a Christian to believe it. You don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to believe in God. You can believe in God. This isn't a religion. This is a law. It is the law, as you mentioned, it's, to me, the law of physics and the law of attraction, it just goes with it. And it isn't a good or bad. That's what people have a really hard understanding. The law of attraction has no emotion. It doesn't want good or bad for you. It doesn't have any desire for you to have good or bad. It just produces what you vibrate. It brings to you what you're vibrating. And that's what I mean by that, what you're feeling and all, what you're really feeling, not what you're just saying you're feeling. But if you, for example, me as a recovering compulsive gambler, if I go buy a lottery ticket tomorrow, and say, the law of attraction is going to let me win the lottery, that's false, because what I'm saying is I'm so desperate that I don't believe I can make it on my own that I'm going to need to go buy a scratch-off ticket or a lottery ticket to win. And the universe is going to respond not to the fact that I think I'm going to win a ticket, but my desperation and feeling of a lack of money, and I'm not going to win. It's just it's a spiral I will get into.
Mm-hmm.
So it's most people's perceived lack invites more lack. If you believe you are lacking something, and you're like, well, I want more than anything to have a lot of money, and I really want it, you think that's what you're believing, actually you're expressing to the universe, I don't have any money, and that's all it picks up on. Yep, you don't, you're right, no money. And that's why families hand down over and over several people have said this, but I think it was maybe one of the Gettys who said it originally. If you took all the money in the United States and divided equally among every person, in 5 years, the rich people will be rich again and the poor people will be poor again.
Because there'll be variations on it, but yeah, that's the overall
thing. Exactly, of course, are. In general. Because the rich people weren't generally rich because, they say, oh, wow, we're just rich people, we're lucky. That they believe in that. And that's why, like, wealth often will only last a few generations, because a lot of people, they lose what the law of attraction is bringing, and they not vibrating on a wealth level. They're vibrating on I'm fearful of losing my wealth. Well, you're going to lose it.
You know, all this reminds me of something. You may have seen it in the news. I don't know if you did, but just within the last week or two, there's been quite a bit of attention to Einstein's theory of relativity.
Right.
And how there were some Dutch scientists who have essentially proven that part of that theory, which Einstein himself dismissed as being sort of a spooky behavior that couldn't possibly be, they've proven that it actually is true. It was a direct corollary of the theory, and Einstein just couldn't buy into his own theory, so to speak. And the gist of it is, you can have two particles a great distance apart, and when you impact one particle, the other particle far away experiences the same impact, which seems impossible.
Right.
Except under the law of attraction. That is a great way of understanding it. The law of attraction says, well, of course, you're going to any kind of like vibration is going to create a like vibration. That's what that is.
Well, and there, and like you're saying, there's so many studies right now sort of supporting that, and there's a newfound willingness to understand it. And a lot of people, when they can get past dismissing it as voodoo or witchcraft or any of this, you know, silliness, and understand that this is how it works. Have you ever had this feeling? This happened to me just the other day. I have a friend that I have not seen in 20 years, truly. He's not on Facebook, and you know, he was there in the beginning of when things were really bad for me, and I'm like, I really need to find this guy and let him know things are really good. He was very supportive of me early, and I just sort of lost touch with him. And I just put that thought out in the universe, totally dismissed it. 2 days later, the phone rings as him. And he's like, he said, you know, somebody told me the other day that they heard you were writing a book. What's that about? And I'm like, well, and I told, and we talked for about an hour and a half. It was amazing. And I just put that thought out there. And like you're saying, now other people will say, well, that's just a pure coincidence. Well, if you really look back over your life, you'll see many pure coincidences, quote unquote, just like that. And I think a lot of it does happen because we're unaware of the possession of this power, most of us. And even though I feel I'm understanding it as well as most people probably do, I don't think I've touched the tip of the iceberg personally. I think it's so much deeper. And the idea that I believe that I love to learn. I'm constantly studying this. And like I said a while ago, I'm now seeing where some people have practiced the law of attraction, but they don't implement the law of action that goes along with the law of attraction. And that's why a lot of results are you can't change your way of thinking, but yet behave exactly the way you were behaving before.
Another way to say it would be there are no mere coincidences. You have to take the word mere out because it doesn't apply.
Yes, exactly. And that's such a... So, you know, we have everything that we have going on for us right now, we're scratching the surface, and that's why I love the idea of taking the message of the law of attraction. And when I implement it in my practice of working with people and how it applies to addiction and even with traumas and depression, it's just an amazing awakening that so many people have. Now, there are people that are horribly clinically depressed, and they have a lot of medication and stuff that certainly is a necessary component for many people, but so many people are on medication right now that don't need to be, when in reality the cure, and I've used the word cure, which is a hated word in addiction treatment and stuff, but the cure to your way of thinking exists right within yourself, and that's a very important place that I don't think comes around. And to many people, it takes a while.
Yeah, it does. You know, Joel, as usual, we get these interviews going, and all of a sudden they're over before they feel like they've just begun. And here it is once again. It's over.
Wow, it's hard to believe.
But before we cut you off here, tell us where people can find The Bench.
The Bench is available on Amazon. It's on Kindle. It's most of, by the time, but later today, it's supposed to also be on Barnes & Noble and the Nook. Also, Balboa Publishing, Balboa Press, from their website, that's my publisher. Google search, Joel Elston, The Bench, will bring it up in many places. So get a chance, read it. I'd love feedback from it, Walt. It's sort of the law of attraction. Somebody described the book as an adult version of The Giving Tree and The Secret combined. It is bringing it all together, and I'm hopeful that other people will be able to read it and find hope and realize no matter what you're facing, the ability to overcome it and move on is there.
Joel Elston, thanks for joining me once again. It's been great as usual.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
Because I'm happy.